You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll take a look at how misleading or fake news spread on social media might have influenced the elections.
First, the U.S. Surgeon General, Vivek Murthy, today issued a report on the drug crisis in America. Here he is describing the report's findings to NPR.
What may surprise people is to know that 20.8 million people in our country are living with a substance use disorder. This is actually similar to the number of people who have diabetes, and it's 1.5 times the number of people who have all cancers combined. That's pretty extraordinary in terms of the burden of disease that we have with substance use disorders.
According to that same report, there are now more people using prescription opioids than use tobacco. This epidemic is costing the U.S. more than $420 billion a year.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention estimates that 16,000 Americans die each year due to prescription opioid overdoses, and 3 out of every 4 heroin addicts first got hooked by taking prescription opioids.
In fact, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration says the vast majority of misused prescription drugs come not from drug dealers, but directly from doctors.
Dr. Anna Lemke joins us now. She's chief of addiction medicine and an assistant professor at the Stanford University School of Medicine. Her new book is Drug Dealer MD, How Doctors Were Duped, Patients Got Hooked, and Why It's So Hard to Stop. Dr. Lemke, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So this new report out today confirms something you already know. A lot of people are getting addicted, starting not with, you know, what you might think of illegal street drugs, but with these prescription pain-relieving medications.
Absolutely. It's really a national health care crisis.
Now, you deal with people with addictions every day, and you say the cause here goes back to, as you say in your title, how doctors were duped. How were doctors duped into prescribing, over-prescribing opioid pain relievers?
Well, a lot of times when people talk about this issue, they always blame big pharma. And there's no doubt that the pharmaceutical industry, motivated to get doctors to prescribe more opioids, had a part to play in this. But I think what's often forgotten is that it has always been the goal of the pharmaceutical industry to sell more drugs. The really interesting question is, why now? What changed in medicine that allowed Big Pharma to get such a toehold in there and get doctors to actually just start writing these prescriptions like mad? And the answer is twofold. Number one, there was a huge paradigm shift in medicine toward treating pain, which promoted more liberal prescribing of opioids for chronic pain conditions. Prior to 1980, doctors were reluctant to do that for fear of addiction. And the reason that that changed in medicine, because there was recognition that we weren't doing a very good job targeting pain in our patients. But the other reason that big pharma had such a toehold is because they were really exploiting the healthcare delivery crisis. More and more doctors have more and more pressure to see patients quickly, to see them in 5 minutes, to get them in and out the door, and to make sure that they're satisfied with their care. So in a way, prescribing more opioids was a solution not to patients' problems, but to doctors' problems, a way to make happy customers get in and out quickly.
Were there voices of doubt? Were there people warning, hey, we're going too far with these drugs as this epidemic was kind of happening under the radar?
The first people to really identify that the epidemic was happening were addiction medicine specialists. I started seeing this problem in my clinic very early on, and others in the field of addiction began crying out quite early, saying, hey, you know, I used to see people coming in with alcohol or various street drugs. Now I've got patients addicted to the medicine their doctor's prescribing without their doctor even realizing what's going on. But unfortunately, the voice of addiction medicine specialists has been really muted in the House of Medicine. For more than 200 years, addiction medicine physicians have been trying to advocate for the medical system to regard addiction as a medical illness, and there's been huge resistance to that. It's only recently that now medicine is starting to wake up and pay attention to the problem of addiction.
Yeah, in that CDC report that came out today, or the report that we heard from the U.S. Surgeon General, I should say, another point there was that with all these people with addictions, you know, maybe something like 1 in 10 of them has access, is getting some kind of treatment. Is that accurate as you see it?
Absolutely. And a lot of people, have the misconception that people with addiction don't get treatment because they don't realize they have addiction. I have to tell you, I see so many people who come in here and say flat out, I have addiction, I want help, but my insurance company won't pay for it. You know, there are a lot of wonderful rehabilitation centers, residential treatment centers all around the country, tons of them in Southern California, but they cost upwards of $70,000 a month. Who can afford that kind of care? What we need to do is really reorganize medicine so that people can get their care within the house of medicine, and insurance companies will pay for it.
Do we know it works? Do we have effective ways to treat addiction?
Look, a lot of people say that addiction treatment doesn't work, but it's really not true. The data show that those who participate in addiction treatment have about a 50% response rate, and that's on par with the response rates for other chronic illnesses, from major depression to diabetes. So addiction treatment works, and there are a bunch of different strategies. There's medication-assisted treatment. There are psychosocial interventions. Even the 12 steps, like Narcotics Anonymous and Alcoholics Anonymous, can be very effective for those who actively participate, although it's not medical treatment per se. So treatment works. The bigger problem here is getting insurance companies to pay for it.
Talking to Dr. Anna Lemke, author of Drug Dealer MD. She treats addiction. She works with a lot of patients. She's writing about how so many opioid medications got prescribed, how so many people got hooked on them. You can join in, by the way, at 800-642-1234. If this is a story affecting you, affecting your family or your community, 800-642-1234. Dr. Lemke, we talked a little bit about treatment there. Let's get to the prevention side. Are doctors starting to prescribe these opioid prescriptions less than they were?
Great question. So in CDC, in 2011, the CDC declared that we were in the midst of a prescription drug epidemic, and they clearly identified the major culprit, that is physicians over-prescribing. You would have thought since that announcement, and since you cannot open a major paper or listen to mainstream media today without hearing about the opioid epidemic, that rates of prescribing would have gone way down, but it's not true. They slightly plateaued in 2013, but in 2014 we had record rates of prescribing of opioid analgesics in this country. So that really begs the question, why do docs keep prescribing? And the answer really is some major problems within our healthcare system. Again, incentives within the healthcare industry for doctors to prescribe even when they know it's not working.
And let's talk about when it's not working. You point out that there are appropriate uses of these medications. Chronic pain, chronic long-term pain, doesn't seem to be one of them. I learned this reading your book. For some patients, the opioid medication makes their chronic pain worse, not better. So they're addicted and still suffering from the pain.
Rob, that's a great point. I'm really glad you raised it. So we're not saying here that opioids don't work for pain. Opioids are like magical treatment for pain. The problem is that if you take them every day for an extended period of time, your body adapts to the effects and they eventually stop working. And then you have a new problem. Not only do you have your original pain, but you also have dependence and, if you stop taking them, withdrawal. And so this is really the important message that we have to get out to the public, that it's not that opioids are intrinsically bad. There's certainly a time and a place for them, but if you take them every day, you will develop tolerance, you will become dependent, and they can even change your pain threshold so that all of a sudden you start to be more sensitive to pain rather than less sensitive to pain. What we're experimenting now with and seeing good results is taking people off of chronic opioid therapy, which is a really hard thing to do because the withdrawal can be excruciating. But we're discovering that when we do that, their pain condition actually gets better than it was when they were on the high doses. So it's absolutely essential for people to understand this factor of the opioids. It's not that opioids are bad. It's not that opioids have no place in pain treatment. But when they're taken daily, they don't work for pain.
That's hard in the doctor's office, isn't it? I'm a patient. I'm feeling like I'm in pain. I need these medications. I'm a compassionate doctor. On the other side of this, I've got this patient who appears to have this real need. It's not just as easy as just saying no, is it?
No, it's really not. It requires a great deal of time to educate patients about this whole phenomenon of dependence, tolerance, and neuroadaptation. And one of the things that I always tell my patients is, you know, you take the pill and immediately it relieves your pain, but on some level, all it may be doing is relieving your withdrawal from your last dose. because part of opioid withdrawal is full body pain, even in patients who don't have chronic pain conditions. So this is a key point. People have this subjective sensation that taking the opioid relieves pain, but probably all it's doing after you've been taking it every day for months at a time is just relieving the withdrawal from the last dose.
Let's bring on a caller. Susan is with us in New Berlin. Susan, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to call in this time. I used to work in dental offices, and in particular, one dentist that I was working for was prescribing like a 20 to 28 pills for a toothache that he took care of either that day or the next day. And I asked him if he could lower that dose. I said, "You're taking them out of pain anyway. You know, please don't put that many more prescriptions, that many more pills out into the public." And he said, "No, that's fine." So I talked to a pharmacist who was friends with him and said, "You know, can you talk to him about lowering the number that he's giving out?" And he said, "Oh, his prescriptions are about the same as every other dentist I work with." And I said, That's crazy. Then there are more dentists giving out all these meds.
And Susan, I want to jump in and give Dr. Lemke a chance to respond. Those patients who need it after a tooth extraction or a surgery, is this a big problem that they're getting too many of these pills when they walk out the door?
Well, first of all, Susan, I want to commend you for having the courage to speak up. It can be really hard to do that, so I really applaud you for doing that. In my book, I talk about a specific case of a young man who became addicted to opioids and eventually ended up on heroin, and it all started with a prescription from his dentist for Vicodin after a wisdom tooth removal. Why doctors do this, it's very complex and psychologically it's got all kinds of pieces of it, and again, I talk about it in my book, but basically what's going on there is a lack of awareness or understanding about addiction, wanting to have a grateful patient who thinks that they, you know, will do anything to treat their pain and that the opioids are okay, and also, frankly, not wanting to be called back and bothered with lots of, pain calls later for pain, just feeling like I'm going to give this big bottle, and that way, you know, no one's going to call me back, and I'll have more time for other things. So that's an oversimplification, but if you read my book, you'll be able to gain a better understanding of why basically good people and well-intended doctors and dentists might continue to engage in this behavior, even when it's not in the individual or the public's best interest.
We'll leave it there for now. Dr. Lemke, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
That was Dr. Anna Lemke, Chief of Addiction Medicine at Stanford University School of Medicine. We've been talking about her new book. It's called Drug Dealer MD, How Doctors Were Duped, Patients Got Hooked, and Why It's So Hard to Stop.
Coming up, we'll talk about how misleading and even fake news could have played a role in the 2016 presidential election. I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.